This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning to you. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Philip C, and joining me in the studio today is Wong Xiaoning. It's 7:08 in the morning on Tuesday, the 5th of July. In half an hour, we'll be speaking to Jeff Ng, Senior Currency Analyst at MUFG, on emerging market currencies. But first, let's recap how global markets closed.
Well, the US celebrated their Independence Day, so all markets were closed there. But in Asia, it was rather mixed. The Nikkei was up 0.8%. Hang Seng was down 0.1%. Shanghai was up 0.5%, Singapore Straits Times up 0.8%, and our very own FBM KLCI was down 0.8%.
A very mixed day, and to just get more insights on how Asian markets are expected to perform, we have on the line Peter Lim, Associate Director of Arika Capital. A very good morning to you, Peter. 25 years ago this month, the Asian financial crisis started with currencies soaring, stock markets crashing, economies going into recession, which was followed by some changes in government. Are we anywhere near this crisis?
Yeah, hi. Good morning, guys. We are in a very different scenario compared to Asian financial crisis and where we are now. I mean, the situation is different. The event is very different. Yeah, I don't think we are at there at this moment. What is causing the crash now is really more of the fear of inflationary pressure. But whereas way back in 1997, it's mainly due to high country debt in the ASEAN region. Right. So, no, in long and short, I don't think that we are in a very similar situation. And I don't see history repeating itself this time around.
Okay, and you know, let's talk about ASEAN then, since you say we are nowhere near the crisis. We seem to be a very defensive market compared to North Asian markets. And if you look at it in terms of the equity returns, yes, everyone's in the red, but our red isn't as bright red as Korea or Japan. But you know, but can we then maintain this outperformance, or will US dollar strength and the narrowing interest rate differential be our death knell?
I just said that, no, when the shit hits the fan, it splatters, right? I think during this kind of environment, honestly, I don't think any country will be spared. That's for sure. But if you look at one of the reasons why we are much better than North Asia, yes, we are also facing inflationary pressure. But one aspect in the ASEAN market is that if you look at our GDP growth, technically it's still higher than the headline inflation. I must stress, I'm talking about headline inflation, not the core inflation. Right. So technically, because what people are more worried about is if your GDP growth is below your headline inflation, that is where what we call a stagflation situation. But if you look at the ASEAN region, generally most of our growth are still above headline inflation. So that's why it became a less worrying situation compared with other countries. And therefore, like what you said earlier, it makes our market actually more defensive than our North Asian counterparts.
So it is relative then. And I think what you're saying is that the specter of stagflation is quite unlikely in this part of the region. Can we just focus specifically on Malaysia? Bank Negara is set to meet on Wednesday. What's your expectation with regards to interest rate decisions? Will the MPC raise rates by 25 bips, 50 bips, or even stay pat?
I think I'll come in this direction of my wish list. Actually, I've been saying that I think Malaysia, we shouldn't have increased interest rate in the first place. So if you ask me what is my wish list, actually, I wish status quo. I wish there's no increase in interest rate. That's what I wish for. I always think that we are way too early in increasing interest rate. Because if you look at even our inflationary pressure, yes, it's high, but it's not as high as the Western countries per se. And our economic recovery is still very, very much early to actually withstand a rate increase.
Oh, you take a rather different approach. I'm trying to understand why you think we should just stay pat, because it seemed at one point that our ringgit was rather weak. So I don't know whether the central bankers wanted to move ahead, actually.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I mean, I suspect the same reason that, no, the reason for the last increase was actually to defend the currency. But then if you look at it, right, even after the last rate hike, it didn't really defend our currency. Our currency continued to weaken even after the rate hike. So trying to hike rate to defend currency is always a very bad move. Interest rate should always be related to the state of the economy. So if you look at our Malaysian recovery, remember we have a third lockdown way back in the second half of last year. Right. So while other countries are already recovering, opening up, we are still in a lockdown mode, which resulted in our recovery being much delayed compared with other countries. So our recovery is still very fragile at a very early stage of it. And to hike rate at this moment, you're like just coming out the sprout when it's just starting to emerge in that sense.
If we anticipate perhaps a weaker currency, you know, as interest rates remain pat on this scenario, right, in your assessment then, where are the investment opportunities in Malaysia? You know, earlier on you painted the story that this region becomes a defensive strategy play. Where is the momentum going to be built?
I think the momentum will be more still on the core economies. I mean, when I say core economies, I mean to say you're looking at the banking sectors, which is the driver of the economy, and also on industrial and consumer. Right. So I think the investment opportunities will actually be more on this. Not so much on commodities. I think that commodities has actually peaked and it is rightly on the reversal mode at this point in time.
Okay, let's talk about something which is impending, although we don't really know the date. A lot of speculation. And that is, of course, the general elections. Now, what does history tell us about how the Malaysian market will react when it does happen?
I guess if we track back past elections and the stock market condition for the 12 months before the announcement of election, I think you don't really get a consistent result. Because Malaysia is quite unlike the US. No, US is pretty fixed, right? You get a November every 4 years. So you can actually track how the market performs from January until November during election year. But not much for Malaysia, right? They always try to have this element of surprises or element of delays per se. But even if you try to take a backtesting, right? Say 9 months before the election date has occur. Again, you don't really get a consistent result of what actually reacts. But generally, Malaysia is still pretty much boiled down to what is the expectation of the result. Whether people expect that the ruling coalition is going to have a stronger mandate or is going to get a weaker mandate. So that sentiment actually affects the market more than anything else in Malaysia. And if you ask me at this point in time, assuming the election were to be announced now, my personal take is I think the market will react positively because no market wants certainty. Mm-hmm. And I think people are really quite sick of this waiting game or guessing game, right? No, people just say, hey, just get on with it. No, just announce the date and get on with it and get our life with it. So I guess announcing an election will actually be a positive for the market because it actually reduces a lot of uncertainties in Malaysia.
Thank you, Peter. That was Peter Lim, Associate Director of Arika Capital, telling all of us to just get on with it. But he also shared his contrarian view that he would rather have interest rates stay pat.
Well, it depends on your view. If you think the economy is rather soft and you need a jolt, then it makes sense to actually keep rates exactly where they are. But of course, there are other considerations, right? Which is the dilemma of every central bank, one of which is inflation. And of course, they never openly say it, but the position of your currency at the moment.
It's a dilemma that everybody has to face with, right? This whole issue about economic growth versus managing inflation. But one dilemma that we see quite a lot of convergence is with respect to regulation over crypto, because in Singapore, after a series of high-profile crypto blow-ups followed by a plunging digital asset price, the Monetary Authority of Singapore has been carefully considering the introduction of additional consumer protection safeguards, which may include placing limits on retail participation and rules on the use of leverage when transacting in cryptocurrencies.
So the Central Bank of Singapore has repeatedly mentioned this year that cryptocurrencies aren't for retail investors, which is kind of ironic because if you ask me, the way crypto is trading, it seems like very retail-based.
Yes.
And this is after the $2 trillion market sell-off that we have engulfed the list of players. So Three Arrows Capital, crypto hedge fund, was ordered into liquidation after failing to repay creditors, while Singapore-based Terraform Labs, whose Terra USD stablecoin imploded in May. And just yesterday, Singapore-based crypto lender Vault froze withdrawals and hired advisors to explore a potential restructuring, joining several rivals like Babel Finance and Celsius Network in their last-ditch measures to survive the market rout. But this morning, when I look at Bitcoin, $20,145, Ether, $1,141, still staying above its support levels.
Yeah. So reflecting on this, right, and the earlier conversation we had with Peter about the Asian financial crisis, where he was very confident that we're not going to see a repeat of that. I think for the main reason that, you know, we are not in that debt binge that we used to have. And I think our banks are more resilient, right?
For sure.
So the financial services industry has gone through this whole regulation process. But perhaps now the biggest loser is cryptocurrency. Is this the system that is, you know, driving the implosion?
I don't think so, because the number of there's no way of verifying this, but I don't see institutions being involved in cryptocurrencies,
exactly.
Right? So I would say they have gone mainstream, but not to the point where it's in everybody's portfolio. Every fund manager has this. So everyone's exposure to crypto or the exposure that people have to crypto is rather limited, but it still is infancy. So it has to work it out in terms of the regulations, and you will see many players actually go bust along the way. It's natural.
So we don't see much pressure on the institutional balance sheet, but I wonder on the retail balance sheet for some people. For some people, particularly, whether it will be particularly painful. Because up next, we'll be speaking to Sivan Devarasamy, Executive Director of Swaram, on the new appointment for Suhakam. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.